This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by The Auditorium, presenting Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, April 24th through the 26th. Experience the power, passion, and athleticism under the direction of newly appointed artistic director Alicia Graf Mack. Plus, five Chicago premieres showcasing the bold innovation and artistry that have made Alvin a global cultural treasure. Tickets at auditoriumtheater.org.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Mayor Brandon Johnson is back in the studio for our monthly series, Ask the Mayor. This is when he spends the hour answering your questions and ours. And there's a lot to get to today. Tech companies have sued the city in response to Mayor Johnson's social media tax. There are a lot of concerns from riders on the CTA who don't feel safe on the L. And a Chicago alderman wants to freeze the phase out of the city's sub-minimum wage for tipped workers. We started with talking about Election Day, which is tomorrow. Can you believe it? Here's Mayor Johnson.
I will vote on Election Day. I'm kind of a traditionalist that way.
Okay.
I think I may have voted early once in my life, but I'd like, it's something special about getting up on Election Day.
And going to the polls.
And going to the polls, right. And then this year is an exciting year because my son, he's 18, so he will be casting his first ballot.
Nice.
And so we're going to go as a family. So now there are three voters in our home.
All right. Well, what is this election about for you? So partly, you know, seeing the next generation be able to take part. But what else are you thinking of in these times?
Well, it's certainly a generational shift, right? We have, you know, several retirements that have taken place, whether it's, you know, 7th Congressional District with my congressman, Danny K. Davis, is retiring. Jan Schakowsky, I believe that's the 9th District. There's a, you know, a real competitive race in the 2nd Congressional District. So there's going to be a generational shift here. But what I am, you know, noticing is that the very things that I'm governing on, people are running on those matters and those issues, right? We've been very clear about our pushback against ICE, calling for the ICE to be abolished, you know, creating ICE-free zones. People are also running on affordability. That's something that I have governed around, building more affordable units as housing becomes, you know, increasingly a greater demand. And then taxing the ultra rich. You know, I went through a significant budget battle around this very idea. And you have candidates all over the state of Illinois running on the ultra rich and corporations paying their fair share in taxes. So it, at the very least, it's clear that people are running on what I've governed on.
Mm. You've proposed democracy zones at polling places.
Yep.
There was a vote scheduled for last Wednesday. It was delayed. Tell us more about how they would work.
Well, first of all, the entire ordinance and the proposal is to protect our elections, the sanctity of our democracy. And so this ordinance will introduce it on Wednesday. And so the only reason why it was delayed, we were going to have a special city council meeting for Reverend Jackson. That was delayed,
okay.
Right? And so this ordinance is still going to move forward. And it does three things. One, it ensures that residents in the city of Chicago have secure mailboxes, particularly at a time in which vote by mail is becoming an increasing form of a democracy engagement. The second thing is we're going to make sure that poll watchers are not being doxxed, intimidated, or harassed. One in four of our poll watchers and our poll election workers are CPS students. So we're talking about young people engaged in the democratic process. And then, of course, many of them are also seniors. The third thing that it does is it creates democracy-free zones, essentially, where it prevents federal agents from enforcing immigration, civil immigration in these particular zones? Because here's what we do know. The Trump administration has made it very clear that they want to undermine our elections, and they want to create an environment in which it becomes intimidating to actually show up and vote. And so these democracy-free zones would be enforced the way our ICE-free zones have been enforced.
Some alders have concerns. Now, one critic who's Alderman Gilbert Villegas of the 36th Ward asked this question, what do the election judges or poll watchers do if all of a sudden they see ICE or they see Border Patrol there? What are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to call police? Who do they call?
Yeah, and so the way this policy would be enforced, it would be enforced the same way our ICE-free zones are enforced, right? And we will use the courts to protect the sovereignty of our city. Those concerns were raised when we put forth the ICE-free zones, and now you have 30 million plus people around the country who are living under that executive order. We just saw Milwaukee, for instance, institute ICE-free zones. So democracy-free zones, ICE-free zones will essentially be enforced the same way.
Mm-hmm. It won't be in place, of course, by tomorrow, March 17th. But we do have a general election on the 3rd of November. Would you still be pushing for it then?
Absolutely. I'm going to introduce it on Wednesday, as I've said. You know, as I'm going to use every single tool that's available to me, whether it's through litigation, whether it's through executive orders. In this instance, I believe the city council should participate. There's also going to be some recommendations for other ways in which we can protect our democracy. That's a part of this ordinance. Look, these are unprecedented times. And I can't emphasize that enough, that never in a million years did we imagine that cities would have to defend themselves from federal overreach. And so the tools that I've used, particularly through executive orders, we have seen cities embrace those same executive orders around the country. We also have seen, I believe it was the DuPage County Clerk who instituted democracy-free zones, right? So, and I'm grateful for that work, but just bear in mind that everything that we do in this city, every area in which I've exerted my leadership and my authority, other cities have implemented those same policies. Over 10% of the country right now is living under executive orders that I instituted in the city of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And for the Chicagoan listening right now, who, you know, may feel intimidated tomorrow at a polling place, what should they do?
Go vote. Listen, I can't express enough how imperative it is that we participate in our democracy. And I'll take it one step further. You know, once upon a time, our ancestors were threatened and harassed, and in the worst case, were killed because of their expression to ensure that democracy is alive. It is always going to be worth showing up on behalf of our values of working people to cast our vote. This administration, the Trump administration, wants to instill that type of fear to prevent us from exercising our power. Our collective voice is really our strength. There will be scores of people showing up to vote. The last thing that I'll say is, because of that, you're not alone.
So while we get some calls lined up for you, Mayor, I'll move on here because as expected, big tech companies have sued to try to block the social media tax that was passed in December as part of the city budget. A tax of 50 cents per user after 100,000 users. Now, charges are going against companies like Meta and X and TikTok. And it's estimated to raise millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars a year for the city. What will Chicago do if this actually does get struck down?
Well, again, let me just lift up the fact that, you know, these big tech companies that have made billions of dollars off of the eyes of our children, essentially, right? And even when you look at that report, these big tech companies admit that the mental health crises that we are experiencing has been the result of the addictive nature of social media. And so the revenue that we are generating from these big tech companies, it's going to go directly towards expanding mental and behavioral healthcare services in Chicago. Now, look, we always anticipated that these big tech companies were not just going to lay down, that they were going to sue us. And that's why we are collecting these revenues without it having consequence on this year's budget. We feel confident that we are going to prevail through litigation. And clearly the state of Illinois does as well, because Governor Pritzker introduced a very similar tax following our lead. So again, this is more proof positive that what we are doing in Chicago is on the front, not just showing up on the front lines, but on the cutting edge of transformational government. These big tech companies and the ultra rich have to pay their fair share in taxes. It cannot just simply be a campaign slogan. I appreciate all the candidates who are running on that platform, a platform in which we created in the city of Chicago, calling for a millionaire's tax, calling for a billionaire's tax, calling for a corporate head tax. Because here's the bottom line. We can no longer afford to continue to balance these budgets solely off the backs of working people. That's why my budget was very clear that the ultra-rich and these big corporations have to put more skin in the game, particularly at a time in which, you know, affordability is becoming a growing concern of working people. And so, look, we knew that the lawsuit would come. Again, we did budgetary, we budget this, you know, this season responsibly, by making sure that we did not attribute any revenue generated from this tax mm-hmm. to balance this year's budget. So we're going to continue to go through the courts. And again, I'm grateful that the state of Illinois is now following our lead in challenging these big tech companies to put more skin in the game.
I want to read a statement from the Net Choice Litigation Center, which is bringing that suit that we were just talking about, Mayor. They said, quote, "This tax and taxes like it are essentially a penalty on publishing popular speech. The city of Chicago is attempting to penalize popular services for the fact that they're reaching broad audiences, and that's not, or that is unconstitutional." You say?
Well, look, this is going to play out in the courts, and so I'm not going to comment on litigation that is, you know, underway. What I can say is that these big tech companies have admitted, and they are aware, that the mental health crises that we are experiencing right now, particularly amongst our young people, because of the addictive nature of these apps, has caused a great deal of turmoil. And one of the ways in which we can right the wrong is ensuring that that revenue addresses the crisis that, quite frankly, has been created or brought to us by these big tech companies. Look, our ability to be able to move information at a faster pace, that's something that is exceptional, mm-hmm. and that's something that we should all embrace. And we always want to make sure that these platforms provide voice for the voiceless. And in many regards, that has demonstrated to be effective. While at the same time, it's important that we pay attention to the areas of not just consternation, but the areas of harm that research has been, you know, very thorough in its discovery of that type of harm. But also, you know, challenging as our economy becomes more digitized, it's important that we shift our revenue streams to match the direction in which our economy is moving in. That's the smart part about what we are doing. There's a reason why the state of Illinois has embraced this concept, because as our economy becomes more digitized and online, we have to capture the revenue where the economy is resting. And that revenue goes back into our streets, our law enforcement, our education system, right? These are not just revenues that we're, grabbing just for the sake of it being available. This is about funding services, of course, to continue to build safe and affordable communities. That's what my focus has always been, and that's what it will remain. It will remain with the heart, the hearts of the people of this city.
All right, let's get to the phones, because lots of folks want to talk to
you.
First up is Jermaine in Avondale. Good morning, Jermaine. What's your question?
Good morning, Mayor Johnson. The question that I have is, why doesn't Chicago have more turning lights for turning lanes at major intersections? Because, for instance, in my area at the intersection of California and Diversity, there is no turning light for folks trying to make a left onto California to go northbound and eventually get onto the entrance ramp for the expressway. And what happens is that lane of traffic gets really long, and it ends up blocking both lanes of traffic in terms of going eastbound on Diversity. And it's like this at a lot of major intersections in Chicago. Another example would be is the intersection of California, Damon, and Clybourne. It's only causing major delays everywhere in Chicago. So I want to know, when is Chicago planning on adding these turning lights for these lanes so that traffic can keep moving, especially with the addition of bike lanes being added?
Thank you, Jermaine.
Yeah, thank you, Jermaine. It's a great question. Yeah, look, we've had, you know, a very, you know, antiquated system in Chicago, you know, at a time in which we didn't have as many people driving. When the city was planned, it did not, you know, attribute or account for that type of scenario. As we continue to do traffic studies around areas of all of which you've named, as we increase, you know, the ability for pedestrians as well as bikers to be able to move around in the city, those type of adjustments through our Department of Transportation will be made. I can tell you, I'm fully aware, especially turning left in Chicago is probably one of the most difficult things to do, especially when you're moving down major thoroughfares. So it is something that is top of mind because it does not only just help traffic move quicker, but it also ensures that we're safer. So thank you, Jermaine, for that. And we will continue to utilize the traffic studies to implement stronger traffic lights that encourage better flow within the city.
Thank you, Jermaine. On to Frank now. Frank is calling from Rogers Park. Good morning, Frank. Your question?
Good morning, Sasha and Mayor. My question is, Mayor, have you sat down and discussed with the owner of the Chicago Fire? I know they evidently you've broken ground for a soccer field there, which is about the same size as a football field, by the way, and or the owners of the Chicago White Sox and or the owners of the Chicago Bears to do a joint venture baseball / football stadium, because I know you're a Bears fan. You'd love to see the Bears in Chicago. And I thought if some kind of deal could be made that perhaps a combined baseball, football, and even concert venue, if the stadium, of course, had a retractable roof on the top of it, I know it'd be a huge project and a lot of back and forth between the owners. But I was just wondering if you ever entertained that thought in light of the fact that I guess ground has been broken already for the Chicago Fire field.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Frank.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Well, we are really excited about the new football stadium that's being built in the 78. And as we, you know, we call it soccer here in America, but you know, international football is it's a global sport, right? And it is proof positive that we can actually put forth a package that works for the taxpayers as well as for the corporation. You know, as far as conversations with other owners around joint ventures, yes, we've had those conversations. Those conversations will continue. I will say that the lakefront, we're talking about prime real estate. It's the best location for the Bears. It's why they made a proposal to stay on the lakefront. That was 2 years ago. The challenge, Frank, is that we didn't have partnership and agreement with the state of Illinois. What we have seen, you know, since this next iteration of proposals have moved forward, that the state of Illinois committed, I believe, $850 to $950 million, you know, to that particular project. That was not offered or afforded to the city of Chicago. And keep in mind, the Bears, working with my administration, put forth a proposal, and this was after the fact that they had purchased the property to Arlington Heights. So it was it's evident that their preference is to be in the city of Chicago. What we do need is, and I think the last point that you're making, Frank, is that these type of investments open up economic activity for our city. We're talking about thousands of jobs, hundreds of millions, upwards of $8.1 billion of income being generated as a result of the investment along the lakefront. That's the museum campus. It is the number one tourist destination anywhere in the state of Illinois. And so unlocking that entire campus, to your point, Frank, opens up economic opportunities, not just for sporting events, but for concerts. But it also provides public use. Because keep in mind, Frank, and to all the listeners out there, the proposal that the Bears put forward for the city of Chicago, not only did they commit to 72% of the financing, the stadium would be owned by the taxpayers. This is not a stadium being built for billionaires. It's a stadium being paid for by billionaires that the city of Chicago, the taxpayers, will own. That's the difference between what's being proposed in other places. Nowhere else have you seen a public-private partnership in which the tenant would agree to put forth 72% of the financing. What we're looking for We're looking for partnership in Springfield to prioritize the economic engine of not just the state of Illinois, but the entire region. To do anything outside, to not find every possible angle to ensure that your top tourist destination becomes unlocked, to create thousands of jobs for Chicagoans, to bring in $8.1 billion of income along a front that the public would own, in which we would increase green space by 20%, to not look at that proposal in a real serious way and without making a commitment to at least find a pathway to generate the revenue, to build a stadium that taxpayers would own, I quite frankly find that to be, I think it's a missed opportunity if we don't get the partnership and the agreement from the state of Illinois. Thank you, Frank, for that question.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
You got a full city council meeting this Wednesday. Alderwoman Samantha Nugent of the 39th Ward plans to attempt to freeze the phase out of the so-called sub-minimum wage. So that's a much lower minimum wage for tipped workers. She says that it's forcing restaurants in her ward to essentially close, and it's boosting business in the nearby suburbs instead, and that it's too high of a burden for businesses in her area. What are your thoughts on the sub-minimum wage?
Well, first of all, I mean, look, the city council voted over a year ago to raise the wages for tip workers. These tip workers are primarily women, mostly women of color. Black and brown women are certainly overly represented in this particular work group. And we were one of the first major cities to raise the minimum wage for these tip workers, which, you know, I think people understand the history of tip workers, which goes back to the vestiges of slavery, quite frankly. The Pullman porters on the south side of Chicago, fought for dignity to ensure that their work was respected. And so that tipped concept really is tied to an era that we're shifting away from. And so I'm grateful that the city council agreed and voted to raise the wages of these tip workers. Look, here's what I can say. At a time in which affordability is like top of mind for the entire country, Democrats have to pay attention to what the voters of the city of Chicago are calling for, and quite frankly, what voters across America are expecting from leadership at a time in which it's becoming increasingly harder to afford to live in this city, to live in cities across America. Cutting the wages of workers is just, that is antithetical to what we're trying to build when we talk about safe and affordable communities. As far as businesses are concerned, look, I get it. We had 83% renewal for business license. It's the highest it's ever been. Right. And so there's a way in which we can continue to grow and build businesses while also making sure that we're taking care of our workers. That's the healthy balance of leadership in this moment. And so, look, at a time in which, again, more and more people are starting businesses, particularly the food industry, which is one of the driving forces of our economy. People from all over the world are establishing businesses here, and not just restaurants, but to be able to move food products.
Yeah, and some of those business owners have had to take on more due to no subminimum wage.
Well, they've had to take on more is because we have uncertainty that exists, within our global economy. Our economy here locally has stabilized, right? Because there's predictability and there's consistency. Think about it this way. 3.5 million visitors came to the city of Chicago over the summer. It's the highest amount of visitation that we've ever had in the summer months in the history of Chicago. Our airports are busier than they've ever been. O'Hare is now the busiest airport in America. These are all strong signs that our economy is stabilizing and people are confident in it. Again, ensuring that our businesses can continue to thrive, it's why I put forth the $1.25 billion bond. No other mayor has done that. It's the largest investment for small businesses and affordability in the history of Chicago. We can do both. At a time in which the people of this country are calling it out for what it is, that it is becoming increasingly more difficult to afford to raise a family in this country. Democrats rolling back the wages of Black and brown women, again, that is not only tone deaf, but it's irresponsible. What I've continued to do is to engage with our business community, to engage with our workers so that they're not pitted against one another. There's room for all of us to grow and transform in this moment, to provide more incentives and support systems for our small business owners and our entrepreneurs, while making sure that we can stabilize these businesses, because what was happening is because the wages were so low, mm-hmm. the turnover was high. That creates greater challenges within our economy when there's no economic certainty and stability.
It's tricky to make sure everyone's getting a fair shake.
Well, of course it is, but that's what leadership does. The city council voted for it a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And the threat of how it would impact small businesses, just like when we raised the minimum wage in Chicago and Illinois, folks said that this was going to hurt businesses, we're going to have to raise prices, and here we are, several years down the road, and that has not borne out. And so all I'm simply saying is that if we're true about standing up for working people, then we need to ensure that our policies reflect that. There's a reason why I've incentivized small businesses in the city of Chicago. Not only have we made it faster and easier for large corporations to do business in Chicago, but we have our Cut the Tape initiative for small businesses as well. Many small businesses and entrepreneurs have complained more about the process and the process and how long it takes to start a business than they have complained about wages, right? And so if we're true to what we say we are as a city of Chicago, standing up for working people to help grow our small businesses, to develop these economic enclaves, then we have to ensure that we're investing in both,
right,
and not pitting one against the other. And so, again, look, city council voted for it. If Democrats decide that they don't want to give raises to working people, that's a decision that they're going to have to live with. But I'm going to continue to fight for working people in this city.
Let's hear from some callers. Here's Andrea in Rogers Park. Hi, Andrea. Your question.
Hi, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
And Sasha.
Hi.
My question is a question about the elections and whether or not there can be a referendum question on the ballot, obviously not tomorrow, but in the next election, about the unmarked police cars. A lot of my neighbors and my friends are really concerned about just the number of unmarked police cars that are out there. And I wonder, my question is twofold. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think there should be more marked cars? And then the second question is that technical question about the ballot, whether or not we can have a referendum question about whether or not the voters feel that these unmarked cars should be around. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question. Well, look, a ballot referendum, there aren't too many questions that you can't ask and take it to the voters. You can do it by precincts. You can do it by wards. You can do it citywide. And I think that that's a good exercise of our, democratic democracy and our involvement in our democracy. As far as, having like clear delineation or distinction of law enforcement in the communities, I think it has to be a healthy balance. I'm happy, to explore and look into it a little bit deeper around how many unmarked presence we have in the city of Chicago. You know, I did invest heavily into our detectives bureau because too many cases were going unsolved. Our clearance rate was one of the highest it's been in over a decade, 71% of homicide cases brought to a close. That's important, right? Because it's about holding people accountable, and that works as a deterrent. There are a number of, you know, investigatory practices that the department goes through, particularly if there are certain trends that are breaking out around the city. But I'm happy to look to see what that ratio is.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Next up is Joe in Chatham. Hi, Joe. Your question for the mayor.
Speaking of working people, Mr. Mayor, there are about 5,000 firefighters in Chicago. In 1980, the first firefighter contract, with the help of the late Jesse Jackson, mandated 30% black employment. As of now, there are less than 400 and no longer an Appendix G in the contract. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, we have seen a decline in black participation in many of our public sector positions, and that's not limited to firefighters. You know, many people know that I was a public school teacher in Chicago. We've seen declines there as well. Quite frankly, the Appendix G at the time in which it was instituted was not strong enough, quite frankly. And what I have done is I'm working with our HR, because that's where hiring rests, as we work to recruit more and more people to become firefighters, and particularly young black folks. To your specific question, I've made a commitment to the entire department that I would continue to use my platform to encourage more black young people to go into this profession, and also ensuring that our HR department has fair practices that allow for more of black applicants to be in the rotation for strong consideration. It is something that I have my eyes on. And again, I think that there's debate around, quite frankly, the effectiveness of Appendix G.
Thank you, Joe. Good question. Here's Arthur in Norwood Park. Good morning, Arthur.
Yes, good morning. My question, Mayor, and thank you for taking our questions, is about social media tax, and in particular, the fact that it appears to apply to YouTube. YouTube is a very valuable tool for educational purposes. I'm with the Norwood Park Historical Society. We use YouTube for our educational mission, and I believe the Chicago Public Schools use YouTube for its curriculum. So I think that there should be a provision for exempting YouTube from the social media tax. Has that ever been brought up before?
No, it has not. I mean, look, this is not a tax on the individual users, right? This is, you know, we're talking about once they reach over 100,000 users, that there's a small, essentially, fee or surcharge that is applied. Here's what my larger point, though, is, and I was trying to articulate this earlier. Our economy is becoming more digitized. Those same public schools that use YouTube are still woefully underfunded to the tune of about $1.25 billion. And we're just talking about Chicago public schools. If you look at the entire the schools across the state, you're talking about $3.6 billion, roughly, of our schools being underfunded. I know the General Assembly, I know the governor, I know they are committed to fully funding our institutions, but we haven't gotten there yet. And the way we get there is that we have to challenge these big tech companies that keep this in mind. Some of these big tech companies are making billions of dollars annually. I mean, we're not talking about hundreds of millions. We're talking about billions and billions of dollars within a year. These big tech companies, trust me, they are not hurting. The $30 million, let me just say that one more time. The $30 million that we are projecting that we will generate from revenue from these big tech companies, juxtaposition to the billions of dollars that they're going to make, that is a really small ask. That's going to go directly towards mental health, right? This is not going to go into the general coffers for government to decide how to use these dollars. We're going to earmark them specifically to address the need. Because isn't that what you all expect of me as mayor? To address the needs. And so we can't have it both ways. We can say we want these needs to be addressed, but we don't want to figure out how to invest in making sure that those needs are being addressed. Like, who is fighting and standing up for the working people? At a time in which corporations are spending billions of dollars to essentially attract our vote, billions of dollars of campaign commercials, campaign ads, billions of dollars for these elected leaders to do what then in return? And so I'm here to do a public service for the people who elected me, whether you voted for me or not. And people said overwhelmingly that we need more investments in mental and behavioral health. People said overwhelmingly that we cannot continue to rely upon property taxes. People want streetlights. They want left turning signals. They want potholes filled. They want us to invest in our children. They want small business investment. That costs.
Yeah.
And the decision is, do we roll back wages for working people? Do we raise property taxes? Do we continue to burden working people? Or do we challenge the ultra-rich in these big corporations to put in a drop in the overall bucket? And I'm saying the people of Chicago deserve a leader who's going to stand up for working people and challenge these big corporations to pay their fair share.
Let's talk about transit safety while you're here. A man was stabbed on a Red Line platform in River North on Thursday. It's just the latest in a violent string of incidents on the CTA or on CTA platforms or on bus stops. We know that the CTA is bringing in Cook County Sheriff's Police to patrol trains. There will also be more Chicago police presence on the CTA. Should Chicagoans feel safe right now riding trains and buses?
Look, there is a concern here, right? I mean, our public transportation system has to be affordable, reliable, and safe. Right? That is my top priority for our public transportation system. And we have implemented programs, services, and interventions to address all of the above. There are more police officers. There's a partnership with the Cook County Sheriff. There are behavior and mental health care providers there to deal with the unhoused and those who are mentally ill. All of that is being addressed, and there's still more work to be done.
Does more police equal a safer environment?
I mean, clearly that's not, no, it doesn't, right? We had more police officers in the 90s and 800, 900 people were being killed every year. So like I've already made that point and I will continue to make that point. More police officers resulting in safer communities is not an automatic. In fact, if that were the case, we would be the safest city in America. We have more police officers per capita than any other major city, right? So it's not policing alone.
Okay.
And in fact, we have to continue to move away from this idea that by just simply putting a police officer on every single corner, that's essentially what Donald Trump was saying. Send in the National Guard, send in the federal troops. Like, that is not the way in which we build safety. It takes a holistic approach. We are grateful that we finally have a fully funded system that is coming online.
Yeah.
And so with those additional dollars, there will be stronger coordination between CTA and CPD. Now there's stronger support coming from the sheriff's office, but it's also DFSS, because people recognize that in many of these instances that you've described, a mental health crisis was the provocateur.
Yeah, a lot of unhoused people ride the trains, right?
And not every unhoused person is mentally ill. What I'm simply saying, it's a both and approach.
Right.
And look, our transportation system, our ridership continues to go up, even with these high profile violent acts. Violence is still coming down, which is proof that our work is working. And so just like people said, hey, Mayor, what are you going to do about homicides in the city of Chicago? When I came in 44 years ago, it was 800. We've cut that in half. There's more work to be done, but the work that we're doing is working. And as far as ridership, yes, I'm going to continue to encourage folks to ride our public transportation system, because even with more ridership, that also acts as a deterrent, because the more people that are around, along with police presence, mm-hmm. along with DFSS and human services, all of that together leads towards a safer transportation system.
Okay, back to the phones. We've got Patrick waiting in Edison Park.
Hey, good morning. Hey, Mayor.
Hey.
My question's about our lead pipes. How are we going to get those lead pipes out of the ground to protect our kids? How much federal money is still left to be rolled out for that program?
Yeah, it's a great question. Both of our United States senators fought very hard, Senator Durbin, the retiring Senator Durbin, and Tammy Duckworth, to receive dollars from the federal government. The city of Chicago, just to put some context here, the city of Chicago was given, I believe, an additional 20 years, if not longer, to be able to remove the lead pipes, because our system is just, that's just how severe our system is. We're working on it, and we're going to continue to work on it. It is a top priority of mine. Again, these are age-old problems that, you know, we've had to confront and that we've inherited, but we're not backing down. We're not shying away from this work. There's, you know, construction that's happening around the city, and I want people to remain patient. We are prioritizing child care providers as well, because to the point that you were just raised, our caller, about the impact that we know that lead has on our young people and children. So it is an ongoing effort. We're going to work as fast as we possibly can to create opportunities for businesses to be able to help do this work, particularly minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses. But we're also, again, you know, moving with all expediency.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Patrick. I want to jump into some questions here about schools, right? The Chicago Teachers Union passed a resolution that would close schools on May 1st. They say it's to support a national day of no school, no work, and no shopping. The union says that this is an effort to, quote, defend our democracy, demand ICE out of our cities, and tax the rich to support our schools and vital services. I'm curious, do you support this?
Well, let's just speak to the state law that they're referring to, that there's a state law that allows for civic days, if you will, like the one that's being described, to get people out and about to petition the government, right? So that's a state law. And, you know, the union's position is one that is living within the confines of that law. I mean, here's what we do know. People all over the country are tired. And working people have had to bear the weight of a sluggish economy while the ultra-rich, you know, continue to get richer. Our schools are woefully underfunded. Our parks and our libraries need more support. To Patrick's call, we need more funding to right the wrongs of, you know, centuries-old wrongs, right? We're talking about lead pipes that we need to remove, right? People want, again, more investment in our public transportation system. Mm-hmm. All of that requires, you know, a push from working people to challenge elected leaders.
Well, CPS parents, myself included, might be thinking, these kids do have quite a few days off, right? They're off tomorrow. They're off on Wednesday. They're off all next week. They're off on April 3rd. Mm-hmm. That is a lot of days off if we're going to add May 1st to that list.
Well, look, I'm a CPS parent as well. You know, I taught in our public schools, so I'm the first mayor to ever have done both of those or either of those, quite frankly. So, look, I get, you know, that. And I also know that CPS parents want their schools to be fully funded, right? And so, like, these are the challenges, as you said. It's tricky. I'm just going to push hard for a second here. And I'm going to talk as Mayor Johnson, but I'm going to talk as a fellow resident of our society. What do we want? What do we want? And how do we believe we can get it? And because here's the thing, if we want our systems to be fully funded, we've had other mayors not fund those things. We've had other elected leaders not do those things. Now, here I am saying that I'm committed to doing those things as well as continue to do the things that have been working, right? That's investing in our public schools. No other mayor has released $500 million into our public schools. No other mayor has done that. No other mayor has committed to democracy. I'm the first mayor in the history of this city to say, you know what? The people of the city deserve to determine what happens with their children and not one single elected leader, right? And so I think the point that I am attempting to make, I hope I'm making it, is that there are demands that we have from our government. Those demands require investments. And if we just believe that we can just sit on our hands and just hope and wish, that clearly has not worked. Mm-hmm. Like, I've called for taxing corporations and I've had other elected leaders fight me who are also Democrats. And so you have a mayor who has stood firm, fighting for progressive revenue, fighting for the public good, fighting against wars, right? You know, fighting to challenge the federal government to show up for working people. I'm doing everything in my power to protect the people of this city. And if we want to see real transformation, particularly, I know one of the callers invoked the name of Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. All of the accomplishments that we have experienced as a result of his leadership, it was all direct action and organizing. It wasn't just simply having conversations with elected leaders. They literally had to protest in order to ensure that we have a right to vote. And right now, our government is threatening that right that we had to protest to ensure that we had it for women, for people of color, right? For other marginalized groups. And so all of these things that we're discussing right now, We are experiencing unprecedented levels of attacks against the gains that our ancestors made. And if we believe for 1 minute that the way in which we're going to receive our God-given rights is by just simply asking questions or having town halls without or absent taking it to the streets, mm-hmm. we are missing the moment. And I'm calling for all of us, even as the governor has called for this, as other elected leaders have called for this, we have to push as a society, government, to do right by working people.
Let me jump in here. That will require protest. On the same topic, you got three finalists for CPS CEO, right? The board is making the final decision, but you appoint a majority of board members. Tell me what you're looking for.
Someone who understands the value of public education starters.
Yeah.
Someone who respects our move to build sustainable community schools. Someone who's going to engage with the community. Look, I actually get to make the recommendation. That is the authority that I do have. The Board of Education could confirm it, or they can reject it. But it is well within my authority to make that recommendation, mm-hmm. just like the police superintendent. I'm looking for someone who's going to be a partner across the board with family, with labor, with city council, with the fifth floor, with the mayor's office. There is no other mayor that has made that type of declaration. Mm-hmm. Every other mayor has made it very clear that that CEO only serves the mayor. I'm looking for someone who's committed to serving this city alongside of me.
Let me squeeze in Christopher in Albany Park, who's got a school board related question too. Hey, Christopher.
Hey, Christopher.
What's your question?
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for taking my question, Mayor Johnson. My question is about the Board of Education. So I understand that we're going to have like a phased in approach with the elected Board of Education. I'm wondering what that is going to look like, and how this soon to be elected Board of Education might address any like greater inequities across the city in our schools.
Yeah, it's a great question, Christopher. So that phase in is already happening. So there are 10 members who are elected, 10 members who are appointed. By next January of 2027, all of the 21 members will be elected, including a board president who will run citywide. You know, look, here's what it's going to look like. You're going to have representation from all over the city. You're going to have a variety of representation. This is why I believe parent voices like Sasha and I are going to be important. Your parent voices, voters, maybe you don't have children in our public schools, but you still believe in the right for a free, high-quality public education. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to get active to not only campaign on behalf of board members, but hold them accountable. Holding them accountable is not just simply making sure that they're living up to their promises. It's supporting them so that they can live up to their promises. So, for instance, I ran on, you know, abolishing the subminimum wage. There are alders who are trying to, like, roll that back. The people who wanted to see that go into effect are going to have to stay on the front lines. And I think, Christopher, that same work is going to be necessary to ensure that the equity, to the last part of your question, is ensured. That every single child has access to high-quality public education, and that we have a fully funded public education system, which requires Springfield to do more.
Just a few seconds here. I want to squeeze in Hector. Hector is from the suburbs, but it sounds like he's driving in Chicago. Hector, do you have a quick question for Mayor Johnson?
Yes, I do. Good morning, Mayor Johnson and everybody in WBEZ. My question is about the red light tickets. I've been an Uber and Lyft driver for 10 years. And, I'm not very sure if these red light cameras are synchronized properly. And there's different sizes of street crossings, you know, that we have to go through. And the other part of the question is, why do we have to endure a 100-year contract that was done by previous mayors?
All right, so you've got 30 seconds.
Yeah, so the 100-year contract is tough, right, because we're locked into that. In terms of red light cameras, like, this is something that I know alders have fought for. It's not something that I'm pushing for. You know, I've respected aldermen with their desire to have red light cameras in certain spaces of their ward to keep people safe. That's an issue that I think that we should continue to take up, because we don't want it to be impossible to drive in the city. We want it to be safe, but we also don't want people to feel like they're being apprehended.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that we're going to have to continue to work with city council on.
You did it. 30 seconds.
That was tough.
Folks, that's it for Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson.
This month, at least.
For the month of March. Thank you so much to all you who called. And if you didn't get through, please try again next month. And thank you, Mayor, for making the time.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Dan Tucker, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. And thanks for listening.